they worked really hard. And, you know, I was just told, get a good education. When I went off to college, we had just been able to afford a little house in the suburbs of Chicago, a little townhouse. And I went off to college and the great financial crisis happened and they lost everything. So just as they were now in their 50s, finally we have like a, you know, average middle class life. Boom, it's gone. They had to file for bankruptcy. They had to move into a tiny apartment. And to be honest, it just, it crushed my parents. It was difficult on their marriage. It was difficult on their spirit. You know, their friends and peers back in Poland were living more comfortable lives at that point, right? So they wondered, should we have come to this place that represents hope and opportunity? And I think that for me planted a seed. And I thought, how could this happen to people who work hard, play by the rules, pay their taxes, all that? How could this happen? And also, something is unfair. There's an injustice in the system. It's like rigged against the average working person. Why? And then I went off into my journalism career, which was, it was almost like this, you know, weird confluence of events, because I all of a sudden wanted to become an investigative journalist. I wanted to hold the powerful accountable. I was not afraid. I mean, it's funny because I think people would say that I'm like a very happy whatever person, maybe softer spoken. I would be the first person to be knocking on the mayor's door saying, like, are you taking, you know, the city's money? So I did well at journalism. And you did that? I did. I have, like, there are videos of me chasing after, like, the mayor, the city person. I always wanted to dig up public corruption and where I sensed that there was some sort of, you know, stealing from the public or something that was unfair, because I saw in the people that I would interview, my parents, right? They were innocent and they were working hard, and the powerful were taking advantage. And so, you know, I think I was looking for Bitcoin, not knowing I was looking for Bitcoin.
Hello and welcome to another episode of You're the Voice. Thanks for being with me. I'm Efrat. I'm here in Madeira, second day of Bitcoin Atlantis, and I have the honor and privilege, and actually I'm very, very happy to sit here with Natalie Brunel. Thanks for coming, Natalie.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. Thank you. I don't know if I'm worthy of that.
Of course you are. You're going to be worthy of a lot more. Wait. So Natalie, just a quick introduction. She's a journalist, podcaster, Bitcoin educator, business and financial media commentator. She's the host of, I think, the wonderful Coin Stories podcast, which I've been listening to a lot lately, but also since I was orange-pilled. And I've seen a lot of your other work as well.
Thank you.
Like some of the educational things that you've been doing, the Swan 1 hour introduction to Bitcoin, which I have shared vastly with a lot of my communities that are starting.
Oh, that's great.
In
Thank
Bitcoin.
You.
And that's a very helpful tool, that 1 hour. And I especially loved your personal story there. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that too. And overall, for me, you're just a super inspiring individual that doesn't shy away from asking the tough questions in a sophisticated yet direct way in your podcast. That's what I feel. And at the same time, especially when I see you in financial media and mainstream media, I think that you have this way of listening to what the audience that is watching that show would be like and what their listening would be. And you talk to that, which is a very good skill. And you have the compassion, I would say, to meet people in their terms or wherever they are in the journey, which is really cool,
because you can
adjust your language and your terms and the level of understanding that you put through to the people that are listening to you. And I think that's very
thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. So
and I also participated in the women's brunch that you put together.
So
here
yes.
It was a lot of fun. So I wanted to start with your background a bit, if you can tell us how
Sure.
you got to this career that you're in. And, you know, in general, you know, you're in Bitcoin and mm-hmm. that's not a natural journey for someone to take. So how did it take you?
Sure. Well, I'll start at the very beginning. I was born in Poland. My parents grew up under communism, and so they never really trusted the government, and they were more into gold, saving in gold if they could. But, you know, there was no sense of economic or social mobility in Poland. You didn't, you know, rise up and achieve something great. And so my parents, and especially my mom, always dreamt of coming to the United States and thinking that that would bring her a lot more economic opportunity and hope, and especially for her children. And that really made an impact on me, because I think about the people I've met and the people that are close to me, and a lot of people, they work really hard, or they take on, you know, challenges, and they sacrifice a lot, not for themselves, but actually to create a better life for the people that they love, whether it's their partner, their child, their friends, their community. So, you know, I really admire her courage, because she waited and waited and applied for the lottery and it didn't work. And so at 38 years old, my mom finally had the chance to for us to come to the United States. My dad was 41. And my dad was actually more worried about us moving. He said, "We know everything here. Why don't we just stay? We have no idea what it's going to be like. We don't know the language." And my mom, I hand it to her. She's just a trailblazer. You know, she's very fearless. And she says, "We'll learn. We will figure it out. We'll learn. Let's go, because our children will be able to get an education and have a better life there." So she convinced my dad to move us to suburbs of Chicago. A lot of people from Poland move to Chicago. It's
Why
like
is
a
that?
Huge
a big community of
yeah,
Polish
big
people?
Community. So it draws everyone in. And you know, you want to be around the people sure. where your culture is the same, all that. So we moved there, and I just saw my parents work so hard. Just, I mean, 6 days a week, night and morning. My dad would be scraping the car from the snow at 3 o'clock in the morning. And at the time when I was very little, I thought, "Oh, you're rich if you have a garage. Like, that means you're rich." And I went to, my mom found like a nice area with good public schools. So of course, a lot of the kids that I went to school with had much more money, and I saw what life could be.
What were they working at?
So my dad became an electrician, so they both started new trades, and my mom actually went to work as a bank teller. So she went to a bank, which gave her interesting perspective, because that was actually right around the time that Glass-Steagall Act was being repealed, and so it was where banks all of a sudden now could kind of go over the wall of investing as well. It was like this repeal of a big kind of separation between retail and investment banks. Yes. And so she was then all of a sudden incentivized to like look at people's accounts to try to sell them more products and credit cards and open another account. And I mean, that's another tangent, but anyway, they worked really hard, and, you know, I was just told, get a good education. And when I went off to college, we had just been able to afford a little house in the suburbs of Chicago, a little townhouse. And I went off to college, and the great financial crisis happened, and they lost everything. So just as they were now in their 50s, finally we have like a, you know, average middle class life. Boom. Ooh. It's gone. They had to file for bankruptcy. They had to move into a tiny apartment. And to be honest, it crushed my parents. It was difficult on their marriage. It was difficult on their spirit. You know, their friends and peers back in Poland were living more comfortable lives at that point, right? So they wondered, should we have come to this place that represents hope and opportunity? And I think that for me planted a seed. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how could this happen to people who work hard, play by the rules, pay their taxes, all that? How could this happen? And also, something is unfair. There's an injustice in the system. It's like rigged against the average working person. Yep. Why? And then I went off into my journalism career, which was, it was almost like this, you know, weird confluence of events, because I all of a sudden wanted to become an investigative journalist. I wanted to hold the powerful accountable. I was not afraid. I mean, it's funny because I think people would say that I'm like a very happy whatever person, maybe softer spoken. I would be the first person to be knocking on the mayor's door saying, like, "Are you taking, you know, the city's money?" So I did well at
and
journalism.
You did that?
I did. I have, like, there are videos of me chasing after, like, the mayor, the city person. I always wanted to dig up public corruption, and where I sensed that there was some sort of, you know, stealing from the public or something that was unfair, because I saw in the people that I would interview, my parents, right? They were innocent and they were working hard, and the powerful were taking advantage. And so, you know, I think I was looking for Bitcoin, not knowing I was looking for Bitcoin. And so to get to the, you know, end of the story is I finally found Bitcoin while I was a reporter. took me years to understand it and study it. And I honestly just started a podcast as a hobby. I was just passionate about it.
While you were still...
While I was a reporter.
Job. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I really like the podcast format, which I'm sure you do too, because you get to have longer interviews. You hear like the whole backstory, the context, you learn more. And I didn't get to do that in my job. I would be sent out and my story at the end of the day would be 90 seconds, 2 minutes long if I was lucky. So it's like, you know, a little bit of time for this day or week or month that you're spending working on a story. And so I loved podcasts.
Plus really like finding out really interesting stuff that you're not able to put in there.
Right.
Because of the length. It's really disheartening, right?
Yeah, you had to leave so much on the cutting room floor, so to speak. And so I loved the format of a podcast. And actually, a lot of people don't know this, but I started with, it had nothing to do with Bitcoin. I did a podcast where I interviewed successful people, some people in my industry, some people in social media or politics, just about how they achieved their success. Because I always love, you know, rags to riches stories. Like someone came from nothing and built this great company or wealth.
I wonder why.
I find it inspiring. You
well,
know?
You've got that natural tendency to go there because of what happened to the parents, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think so. And I love hearing how people overcame obstacles and because everyone has a story. And I think that those stories are beautiful. So I actually did that podcast. And then I had a mentor who said, why aren't you interviewing Bitcoiners? Like all you talk about is Bitcoin. You love Bitcoin. You follow all the people in Bitcoin. And so I thought, okay, you know what? I'll just do a season. I'll just interview a couple people. It'll be a one-time thing. And it turned into my job. And actually, I was lucky because since I had that podcast before, I actually wrote into my contract, my last news job, I wrote, you know, I have a podcast and I'm still allowed to do it. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with this job. That actually came up very, very handy when I pivoted to Bitcoin because they tried to say, oh, maybe, you know, we don't know if you can do this podcast. And I said, no, it's in my contract.
Well,
so it was kind of a random thing that this other podcast turned into this one. Mm-hmm. And now it's my full-time career. So it's crazy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Amazing.
With great pleasure, I'd like to introduce my sponsors. They help me fulfill my mission of spreading truth, freedom, and sovereignty. You're the Voice is brought to you by Trezor, the original Bitcoin hardware wallet company pioneering the development of self-custody for crypto assets since 2013, empowering individuals with an open-source device, enabling beginners and experts to easily and securely hold their coins. I find my Trezor super easy to use and recommend it to my friends and family. Enjoy my 5% discount on Trezor products by clicking the link in the show notes and using the code EFLAT. Next up is Bitcoin Nashville. If you're like me, sick of the globalists and central banks robbing you blind through excessive money printing, you need to be at Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville. This July, the largest Bitcoin conference in the world will shed light on monetary freedom with a glimmer of hope among a darkening reality of centralized power and control. Top speakers and companies will gather in Nashville to take part in building a new reality. I'll be there too, speaking and interviewing. Head over to my link in the notes for a 10% discount using the code BTCIL. And finally, BTC Prague, the biggest, most influential Bitcoin event in Europe, coming up on June 13th with 100 speakers on 4 stages, 100 Bitcoin companies presenting at the expo, and 10,000 like-minded Bitcoiners and freedom lovers from all around the world. I'm excited to attend for the first time as a speaker. I'll be speaking about CBDCs, interviewing other speakers, learning about Bitcoin, and meeting the best and brightest in the industry. The event runs for 3 days with a rich program from pitching contests to panels, presentations, and parties. I'd love to meet you in Prague. Use my code for a 10% discount.
And congratulations on your recent announcement.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm engaged.
Engaged to a Bitcoiner.
To a Bitcoiner.
Which you've met through the industry?
Yes. So we met through Bitcoin. I brought him on the show because his analysis was brilliant. And we found out that we grew up in the same hometown. So the apartment that my family moved into in the little town I grew up in outside Chicago, I was like 500 feet from where he grew up, and we never knew each other our whole lives. Wow. Until Bitcoin. Yeah, we were like, we were in the same elementary school, high school, never met until Bitcoin brought us together.
That's so amazing.
Crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So Bitcoin has already brought some really brilliant stuff to your life.
Yes, for sure. Yes.
Okay. And the podcast, can you tell us a bit about the podcast? Mm-hmm. Why you started it? I mean, you talked about the old podcast, but the Coin Stories. I want my audience to learn a bit more about your podcast so that they can go and visit your podcast. Sure. And learn from it, because I find it very resourceful.
Thank you. So the way that it started, it's sort of evolved, but the way it started is I loved those origin stories that I was doing in the previous interviews. Like, where did someone come from? Why do they do what they do? What did they overcome? And for me, I was very curious about those stories with Bitcoin, because I was learning from all these people, like reading their books and watching their shows. And some of them were very successful in industries like business, finance, engineering. But I just wanted to know, like, where did they come from? And how did they discover Bitcoin? Yeah. And what made them say that this is this transformative technology? So the reason I think my show is able to stand out is, well, first of all, I'm one of the only females voices, or I was at the time. But second of all, I went all the way to the beginning with every guest. And I was like, where are you from? What were you like as a kid? What did you want to be when you grew up? How did you start your career? How did you find Bitcoin? And you hear these fascinating human stories, because a lot of us are very similar.
Yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like, and similar things drive us and motivate us. And it was beautiful to hear some of these really interesting backstories that none of the other shows had. Like, I learned all about Lynn Alden's upbringing and how she was homeless. Mm. And she was driven to achieve and learn how to invest and learn about money. And I mean, she overcame so much to become one of the most brilliant people that we have and learn from. And I had like Michael Saylor's story and Jeff Booth and Preston. And I just wanted to hear the human story behind the Bitcoin headlines. And now I've sort of fused the two together. So I always try to pull out more of like the heart-driven answers and things that are more personal and human. But I also want to hear about like the headlines and the markets and all of that. So it's now kind of a fusion combination of the two.
So you would recommend people to go to certain episodes that you really like, or where should they start?
Well, if you're really new, I mean, honestly, starting at the beginning, there are some gems there, because if you are suddenly coming into the space and hearing from all these prominent names or authors or voices, if you really want to know who they are, where they came from, I've got you covered.
Right there.
You should go to the first like 15 episodes.
Wonderful.
And I have, you know, a lot of the big voices. So
okay, good. Your first experience with money and Bitcoin?
Well, money, very different. I mean, I grew up, I think about it in terms of scarcity versus abundance. I grew up with scarcity. I had an abundance of love and parents who said you can do anything. And I'm so grateful for that, because I think it's probably maybe more important, right? And it pushes you and it drives you and creates like that fuel that you believe in yourself. But in terms of financial security, we did not have that. And I it made a huge impact on me seeing my parents struggle and work so hard, because it was like, it was so hard to make ends meet. And so I wanted for my life to not resemble that. I wanted to work really hard, get a good education so that honestly someday I could take care of my family and say thank you for the sacrifices that they made and be able to help my children. So money was never easy growing up. And then with Bitcoin, it just made me realize I didn't even understand what money is. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand how the financial system worked, or what fractional reserve banking is, how money is printed. And I thought, oh my gosh, our education system does everyone such a disservice, because here is everyone fighting amongst each other. And I was reporting on it. You know, I would report on campaigns and elections and all of it. And everyone was becoming so politically charged over the last 5 years of my career. And it was because they didn't identify the correct problem. It wasn't left or right. It was actually just the concentration of power in general. It was the fact that we have a monopoly over money, and no one is able to save for their future. And their wealth is slowly stolen from them over time. And so once I got that perspective, it was life-changing. And I honestly started to have more hope for the future, because I look at Natalie before Bitcoin and after, and I have to say, I was starting to lose hope in the future. I saw my parents struggling. My job was, you know, I was covering a lot of disaster and tragedy and all that. And everyone was having such a tough time. I thought, how will I afford a family? How will I afford to have a house? You know, what will the world look like with everyone fighting 10, 20 years from now? And Bitcoin transformed all that. Now I look at the future and I'm like, we can build this beautiful future of prosperity and abundance, and we could all probably get along a lot better if we take away the power of money from the state and the centralized forces.
And what about your parents? Are they in Bitcoin?
Oh, sorry. Well, my mom is dollar cost averages, which I'm very proud of. You know, she was always more of a gold bug, but I bought her Seyfedin's book, The Bitcoin Standard, in Polish. So she gets it. Yeah, she was ready. She was primed for orange pilling. My brother and my dad, not as much, but they have Bitcoin. They just don't know about it. I've been saving for them. So, but I will not give it to them access to their keys now because I know that they'll sell. So I refuse. That'll come later.
You keep it for them.
Yes, I'm not letting them sell, as okay, I know good. They would.
Good. You're an amazing daughter and sister. I want to ask, why are you such a big believer in Bitcoin? But I don't think I need to. I think it's quite clear. I want to talk to you about women and speaking up, expressing yourself, taking the stage, claiming authority, and going for something even when you're afraid.
Yeah.
I know that maybe the male audience of my podcast not relate to this so much, but females for sure will, because we have this tendency of not going for something even if we want it until we're like 100% ready or 90% ready, or we know everything we need to know about the topic before we actually rise up. When I see men around me just like speaking out when they know very little about topics with a lot of confidence, you know, and I'm one to take risks. I'm one to stand out and speak out. And I know it's not easy even for me. So I wonder how you have handled that, how other women that are around you, that you're seeing around you, are challenged at really taking that first step and coming out and putting themselves in the front. Yeah. And what does that bring when you do that?
I am really lucky that I had a strong mom, because she was that feminine energy that I really needed growing up, who pushed me to really believe in myself and to love myself and love the womanhood in me. So what I will say is, I think that we've swung to this far extreme where women have tried to become men. Yes. And they've lost what makes them so special, which is the feminine, nurturing, beautiful, more softer side that I think enhances anything that they work on, personal or professional. I do. I think women, I love women. I love the female energy. And I'm not shy about it. Like, I'm not going to sit there and try to dress like a guy and, you know, try to change my voice. Like, I love the fact that I am a woman. I like my hair longer. I like girly clothes. I like the color pink. And if you don't like that, that's totally okay. You know, what I believe in is that people should be free to express themselves. And I think a lot of women have taken on this feeling that they have to sort of hide all of that or mask it to be more masculine, to fit in or be successful within the business world. And I think some have felt that they really needed to, right? That the world sort of was giving them messages in order to succeed. You have to do that. But I just worry about where we've come to, because now it's like we have a question in our society of what is a woman? And people can't even answer that question anymore. And I can't feel comfortable just having, I mean, I've organized the women's events and I had pushback saying, well, why do you need a women's event? You know, you shouldn't do a women's event. It's like,
seriously?
Oh yeah, of course. And that's the world we live in today. And again, it's like, it makes me happy. It makes me happy to see other women involved in Bitcoin. It makes me happy to see them flourish. And I want them to see themselves represented in someone like me. I'm not a financial expert. I wasn't, you know, a Wall Street veteran or an engineer and computer science programmer. I'm just a woman who was working in a profession that she chose and was passionate about, who didn't understand money, learned about it, took the time. I learned about it on my own.
Yes.
And anyone can do the same thing. And it's fun to hang out with other women. And yes. I think what's funny is if you're on Bitcoin, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, it's not the girls that are creating the drama and the cattiness and the infighting. No, no, no.
It's the boys.
It's all the boys.
Yeah.
We bring like a softness to this world. We need more of it. And I hope to encourage more women to get in the space. And so I will continue to have the events. Bitcoin is for everyone. And I will have women's events because I want to hang out with women.
And you should. And that's blessed. That's beautiful. I also want to touch on what you mentioned, that does it take courage or confidence, or took maybe courage or confidence from you at the beginning to come out and put yourself out there, or maybe start your podcast or start speaking when you know I'm not an expert because I don't have the right degree from university yeah. or whatever. And yeah. I know so many women are yeah. stopped because of that.
Yeah. I really urge people to take baby steps because everything is uncomfortable at first. Everything. Whether you're even just like meeting new people in a totally casual environment. I remember when I was a reporter at the very beginning of my career, I was so nervous for everything. You know, I was nervous about knocking on doors and talking to strangers. And luckily I had a little, you don't go into journalism if you're totally terrified of it, yeah. right? Like I wasn't totally petrified, but it's a little uncomfortable. You don't want to bother people. Sometimes you have to ask uncomfortable, difficult questions. But the more you do it, you just build a confidence. And I really do believe that struggle builds confidence. Like it forces you to build up a thicker skin. And
yes.
and I want to encourage women to take those first steps because I do think that there is something within us to sort of wait and be recognized as opposed to go act and be aggressive. It's not like womanly to be very aggressive, right? I read a book early in my career journey that talked about how it talked about women and men and the differences in finances and the economics of careers. And it said that women, even if they're qualified for a promotion, will sit and wait for the recognition, the raise to come.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the men, even if they're not qualified, will go knock on the door and demand a higher salary than they should even get.
It
and
is true. So, I can tell you from my corporate experience, it's true. It's happening.
I was clearly aware of it, but until it was presented to me point blank, that actually helped me because it was like, I need to ask, right? Don't take the first offer and don't take the first no as an answer, right? Go back, ask for more, ask for what you're worth ultimately. It was about knowing your value. And I think we have to be told that we really need to stand up for our value in ourselves. And I think we need to stand up for us being women. Like I'm tired of people saying everyone just has to be some like,
it's fluid.
Like nobody's anything anymore, right? It's like I can't be a man, I can't be a woman, I have to just conform to some like grayness. And no, you can be whatever you want.
Sure, and own it.
Yeah,
love it. And I love that. Thank you. Okay, what you did today is unreal. I mean, you made a new career out of podcasting,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you do full time. Why are you choosing this path? Why do you want to pursue that?
So really at the basis of it is I think financial literacy needs to spread. Mm-hmm. I just want to help people with the education of Bitcoin, and I want the general public to find it approachable. When I started, I didn't really know where to start. It was all over my head. I didn't see people like myself reflected in the voices sharing this message. And I was really intimidated. I was intimidated by the technical components, the mining, the energy. I mean, Bitcoin is this intersection of so
yes.
many different trades and industries and skills. And I didn't have a lot of them. So for me, it's about helping simplify that message. I mean, my job over the last 10 years when I was a journalist was about taking a story and simplifying it. What is the thing you most need to know so that you can maybe make an opinion or decision on it? And then someone can take it more deeply from there. But it's just kind of, I want to be that introduction. I want to be an entry point for people who... there are billions who still don't understand Bitcoin, don't know about it, don't own any. And I just want to be one of the voices that helps share the message.
And you definitely are. you do a lot of market education for beginners, mm-hmm. and I am being asked many times where to start. I mean, we talked about your podcast as one resource, but what are some other things you would recommend people to do when they just start their journey? Mm-hmm. They're curious. They now understand that money is broken, mm-hmm. Or they want to go deeper into it. So is it the book that you read? Is it Seyfeddin Amos or other books that you like or other podcasts?
What's great is there are now so many resources. So depending on how someone learns, like someone might be more visual, want to watch a documentary or videos. There are so many on YouTube, podcasts like ours. Books, if you like books, my number one favorite is Bitcoin Standard always, but there's The Price of Tomorrow, there's Inventing Bitcoin, there are so many great ones. If you're an audio listener, obviously a lot of different shows, podcasts. So I think what's great is there's so much out there now, even learning from Twitter. Like I stay on top of a lot of headlines just through Twitter X. And if you find someone whose voice resonates with you and you find someone who you feel like you can learn from, just kind of stick with it. I mean, double check your sources. That's one thing we have to be careful about with decentralized media, right? Yes. We have to make sure, where are they getting their information? You know, mm-hmm. what are their incentives? Is there someone that is informing their views in a particular way? You have to be a little bit more careful, but I'm all about personal responsibility. And once you find those great independent voices, you know, learn through them.
Yeah, double down on it and go deeper.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a bit about the panel we had this morning and how we talked about doing independent journalism and doing podcasting. So how do you see that world evolving, creating podcasts, being independent, relying maybe on direct financing from your audience versus advertisers? Mm-hmm. How do you see that shaping up?
I think it's going to be a really interesting evolution because today anyone can do this, right? Anyone can, it's pretty accessible to even have very high-end equipment. I mean, your iPhone. I was shooting some of my last stories as a journalist on my iPhone, which is crazy. But, you know, the technology's out there, so anyone could start one. Now, how do you make it, how do you create longevity and how do you create a career? How do you monetize it? That's where I think a lot of the questions, the conflict resides, because you could, if you're wealthy, you could just finance it yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I was in Bitcoin in 2012, I wouldn't worry about it. Or maybe I'd be on some yacht somewhere. But okay, so maybe you get it sponsored, right? That's one path to take because it allows you to keep the content free, mm-hmm. which also has a lot of value because there are a lot of people who need it to be free in order to consume it. So sponsors are a way to monetize. But are you going to have a sponsor that wants to influence your content? Like if something comes up about your sponsor, will you feel uncomfortable being truthful or reporting on it? You know, there's a conflict that arises there potentially. What if, I mean, we saw in the space, people were sponsored by companies that imploded. The FTXs, the BlockFi's. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I had viewers that had put money on platforms because I directed them in some way, you know? I would feel horrible guilt for leading someone to essentially lose. I would feel awful. And we have all the disclosures, but, you know, you'd still feel a sense of responsibility. So you have to be careful. And then the third way is obviously value for value. Like you could offer subscription models and viewers or listeners can pay. But you start to get into like some muddy water, right? Like how much do you charge? What if people can't afford it? What should you monetize? It's just there's, you know, feedback and criticism with all of these paths, mm-hmm. right? So it's just, I think you just have to figure out what works for you. The more content that is free, I think the better. Yes. But I also think there's nothing wrong with paid content as well. I think if you value something, you might be more willing to, you might appreciate it more actually if you pay for it. And there are some great people out there that have paid programming courses or economics courses.
Exactly.
And I think if you have the money and you find that valuable, totally awesome.
Also lecturing.
Yeah.
So you can do that to monetize. You can keep all your other content free and then decide that you do lectures on the same topic, but go deeper with people face to face. And that's how you sponsor your podcast.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
Like that's one of the routes I'm taking, but because I just want more and more people to be exposed to the content.
Right.
Did you ever have such a situation with a sponsor where you were, you know, in a way influenced by what you're saying because there is a certain sponsor?
Not in Bitcoin, no. But in my previous news job I had, we had advertisers for the networks. And I had multiple stories throughout my career censored. They were not allowed to air.
Because of the advertisers.
Yes, either the advertisers or the network was close to a particular maybe political office. And it really frustrated me. I mean, one of the situations happened really early in my career, and I had done a lot of work investigating a local political official. It was a public corruption case, and I had all my ducks in a row. I had this binder of documents. I had worked on the story. I had the sources, the interviews, and the story was ready to go. And the advertiser got very upset, and they called a meeting, and the story never aired.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and so it was the first time where I thought, wow, this is a situation where money and advertising and the people who have the power are influencing the information that gets out there, and that's wrong. I think that's very wrong because I remember saving a quote during that time. It's still in my phone. It's, journalism is not PR. And it really... It planted a seed for me, too, because I thought, does this happen? Does this happen at a higher level? You know? And then when I experienced it again in my career, it made me distrust a lot of aspects of my own industry. And frankly, you know, sometimes I would hear people say fake news. Like, people would scream that sometimes at me when I was on the street, because there was that phase where it was, I think it was during the, like, 2015, 2016 campaign and election season. Mm-hmm. And that word was so...
Ingrained
yes. with a lot of people.
Yes.
And we would have like our news truck, right? I was working for a affiliate at the time, and people would drive by, and all of us reporters were just standing there ready for our story, our live shot, and people would scream fake news. And it's funny, like I didn't think that person screaming was a bad person. I'm like, I understand where that feeling comes from. You're dissatisfied with the information that we're providing, and maybe, like, are we telling the full story? Because sometimes I started to feel like I would watch every news program. I was like a huge consumer of my industry. And I would watch things and I would go,
that's not the whole thing.
Well, it was just like, this is what, we can't just say everything that the government says is fact and everything that the government says is the right side of the story. It's like, well, can't we question it a little bit? We're not a lapdog for the government, or we shouldn't be. And so that also made it easier to leave the industry because I felt like it was overall moving in the wrong direction. I had great bosses. I had great places that I worked. It was, you know, a mix of good and bad in many of the situations that I was in, but the industry is moving in the wrong direction.
And I think in the last 4 years, we've seen a lot more journalists that were working in the media coming out from mainstream as whistleblowers on the media channels that they came out from, saying that they were censored or just similar stories to what you said now, but with Big Pharma influencing big time their work, and they didn't want to take it anymore. And we've also seen what happened to Tucker Carlson, right?
Well, it was really crazy to see during the pandemic. I mean, all the advertising, like this news show sponsored by
Pfizer.
Like, well, of course, how can you trust anything that's really being... You have to watch for the advertising. You do. But not only that...
If you watch television, well, yeah, still.
But also, it seems like a lot of mainstream, massive legacy networks now, it's like about access to these political figures. Like, that there's a reason why they get the sit-down interview with the Fed chair or the president or the vice president. You know, it's like there's like this, it's
click.
They're not going to agree to the interview if they're going to be, you know, shouted down their throat of what they're doing wrong. Right. So I don't trust it as much either. I'm really grateful to be in the decentralized media world.
And how do you think we're going to see censorship developing? Like, we talked about that a little bit also in the panel. Censorship impacting our lives in the next few years?
Well, I'm just grateful that Bitcoin exists as a tool against things like censorship and surveillance and all the tools of concentrated power that are made even easier through the technologies today. I'm trying to focus on the good because any time you can turn on the TV, right, and around the world there are horrible things happening, mm-hmm. and more people who are in positions of power who want to maintain it, have a grip on it, and wield their power over others. We have to put our energy into this new world that we're building through decentralized technologies like Bitcoin. We have to educate people, because that is the only thing that we can fight that side with. The forces of freedom have to overpower the forces of control. And so instead of, you know, talking just solely about all these different problems here, problem there, censorship. No, it's like, here's Bitcoin. Here's why it's important. Here's what you can do. Here's what this person's doing with it. Like, I really want to channel all the energy into the good and into the solution, as opposed to just the problem. I'm so grateful that through Bitcoin, we're able to recognize the problem and identify it.
Yes.
Now let's just like, let's put that in the shadow and like, yes, focus all the light on this beautiful tool that we have that is accessible to literally 8 billion people in the world. And I love what Michael Saylor said in his talk. It doesn't matter if it's your enemy. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, oh, some people don't want companies in Bitcoin. Some people don't want governments. Every person that adopts Bitcoin, first of all, they're all people, and everyone benefits the network. So it could be your friend, it could be your enemy, but this tool will make it a lot harder for these concentrated nuclei of power to exist, I think. I think it will put a lot of pressure, and it will be a release valve from some of this just chaos that has been created from the centralized world.
I love what you're saying, because you're essentially saying, you know, that beast exists. We all know it exists. There are horrible things happening. We cannot hide from it. It's reality. However, the more we participate in talking about it, looking at it, yeah, discussing it, whatever, trying to fight it, the more power we give it.
Yes.
And if we just go to this new reality that we're building,
right,
through new tools that are now existing, and we can harness,
right,
them to our advantage,
right,
then in a way we're implicitly starving that beast.
Yes.
And it can continue doing what it's doing, just we're not participating in that,
right,
anymore.
Right.
Right.
Right. I mean, I don't know why this analogy came to mind, but we often call Bitcoin the life raft, or like a Noah's Ark, right? It's like, instead of focusing on the flood and talking about the flood and the weather's getting worse and worse and all these things are going to die, it's like there's this person building an ark and all these animals are, you know, it's like this is where we should put our attention. Like, this is the solution. It will save a lot of us.
And there are a few spots left. You can come in.
And luckily with Bitcoin, there's room for everyone, right?
Yes.
It's like, it's not a situation like that where only a few people will make it onto the life raft.
Yes.
We all have it. And so I try to focus on that a lot, because my former industry, it was so negative. Like, every day it was like shootings and death and destruction and disaster. It was the worst sides of human nature.
Yes.
But what I saw is, in all of those situations, there are the helpers, the rescuers, the people running in, risking their lives sometimes to help and to rebuild and to just give a hand, whether,
mm-hmm,
they have a lot to give or very little. Those are the inspiring stories that touch you and stay with you. And they're a representation of the human spirit. And so I want to focus on the fact that Bitcoin is a tool. It is a solution for so many problems in so many parts of the world. And yeah, we have all these problems. I'm not going to talk about them. I'm going to talk about the solutions.
Amazing. And by the way, you guys, I'm just, as you're speaking, I'm remembering that some of my favorite episodes on your podcast are with Whitney Webb.
Oh, yeah.
She's awesome.
I know.
And yeah, I highly recommend watching them. Where do you see us in about 5 years from now with Bitcoin, and even 10 years from now? Where would you think it will lead us?
I'm super excited. I can't believe how much progress has already been made in 15 years. I mean, this is a brand new technology, mm-hmm, right? It took like 1,000 years for gold to become money.
Yes.
And we've been in this crazy fiat experiment of paper money for who knows how long, and it's been a disaster. 15 years of code that has turned into a global phenomenon. It is literally accessible to everyone. You can take your entire material wealth with you, memorized in 12 words or 24 words and you can transport it. You can send it at the speed of light across. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And yet so many people still don't know about it. And we're already at what, 60 something thousand US dollars per Bitcoin.
It's fucking crazy.
And it's like, it doesn't, what the fiat price doesn't matter, right? It's one, yes, Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. It's all the other currencies are collapsing essentially, yes, at different rates.
Yes.
And it's just so, I just see, you know, hundreds of, I think we're going to hit a billion people by 2025. That's what a lot of the charts I've followed say. I think we're going to have more podcasts and more companies and more wallets, just more tools that people can use and more communities that are becoming, I don't know, more empowered. I think that Bitcoin empowers the companies and the communities and the people that use it. So I think it's a bright future. Like I said, before I would have looked at the future and thought, ugh, it's not going in a good direction and all of us are out for ourselves.
Yeah.
No, now I'm like, oh, this is exciting. We can build with one another. We can collaborate and work with one another.
1000%. Love it. I always ask, my last question is a message of hope, but you've just given it, so no need.
Yeah, hope is important.
Of course. I mean, and you know what? Let's talk about this for a second, because I think, especially where I come from, it's so easy to get dragged down to, mm-hmm, the dark sides of life. Mm-hmm. Life is not easy these days, mm-hmm, even in Western democracies. Mm-hmm. They're not easy for, mm-hmm, many people, especially when their wealth is being stolen away from them and they don't know it. They, yeah, don't understand why. And it's so easy to get dragged to the dark path. And to waste so much energy and so much time at trying to fight it. I really think, like you, that putting most of your time on finding solutions rather than talking about the problems is the way to go. And I just want you to, I don't know, maybe inspire people to take those first steps. Like, what is it? Stop watching TV. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, stop talking, like, really practical tips. How can you focus less on the dark side and more on the bright side of life?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you learn, you empower yourself. So anything that people can be doing to be learning, I think, is really important. And I think Bitcoin opened my eyes up to so many things I didn't fully understand. And it allowed me to learn about money and how political structures were created and how they evolved over centuries. It taught me about time and appreciating, yes, time. It taught, yes, me more about energy. I mean, Bitcoin is called digital energy, and the whole point, the reason we're able to draw consensus is through this proof of work mechanism that it relies on energy, and it's this tie to the real world. And we are all energy. Right? And we vibrate on different frequencies, but like, yes, everything is energy. And so the more that you surround yourself with positive energy and the more you speak positivity to yourself, mm-hmm, the more you draw in positive things, including knowledge, the better not only you will function at a higher level, but also the people around you, because it really is contagious. That's why you see a lot of angry, miserable people hanging out together. Yes. You see a lot of like happy, enlightened people hanging out and building and growing things. You are the company you keep, but you start with yourself. You need to like hone in, and Bitcoin has helped me do even that. It's made me rethink, like, how do I respect my time? How do I think about the future? How do I think about my past? I mean, I think any one of us, if we were to say, if you could go back in time, what would you tell yourself? I think a lot of us, one of the things would be, don't worry so much. Stop doubting and worrying and just go do. Go, yes, do, go, yes, try, yes, attempt, risk, learn, right? And so many of us, it's like our own voices hold us back. We're our own worst enemy sometimes. So I urge people to try to center in, learn, be positive, and see how you can provide value. I think some of the most fulfilling things that we could do is when we're in service and helping others.
Yes.
And a lot of people are dealing with some of the issues we've talked about earlier that has led to some of the corruption and like confusion and, you know, just society pulling apart and, mm-hmm, I can't be proud of you. It's because people are lost. I think, yeah, they're lost. They're searching for something. They don't know what it is. And they're easily falling prey to these distractions and manipulations don't, like, center yourself. Yes. Because we all have a soul, which is made of energy, and we are more connected than we give ourselves credit for.
Love that. I just want to add one last thing to that beautiful ending. Stay humble.
Yes.
Right? Because the moment you can drop your ego and say, okay, I thought I knew, but I don't. Yeah. And now I'm learning again.
Yeah.
That keeps you so refreshed and so open to life again. And you can start over and it's never too late. Mm-mm. So
it's never too late. No.
It's never too late.
Yeah.
Okay, Nat, where should people follow you? Twitter or?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I'm on Twitter. I talk a lot about Bitcoin, obviously. I have a YouTube page, Natalie Brunel. Coin Stories is my podcast. And yeah, I'm just going to be focusing on more educational content throughout the year. So very grateful that you had me on the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.